Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and out of the greater Dayton areas, Mainville, which is north of Cincinnati, as well as Dayton. And today's episode, we had an inspection yesterday that had to do with a upstairs, downstairs, not a side-by-side, but it could have been. And it was a duplex with a twist, a basement twist. In a stone foundation basement, there was a twist. And I'll get to that. But hopefully there will be a little bit of suspense with that. So let's pretend you're an investor and you see a duplex and you are eyeing putting your money to good use and having a cash flow and trying to figure out what you can earn on a monthly basis after all your expenses. Or you have a property that you have that's you're looking to buy. It's a duplex and you want to live in one of them and rent the other out. Or you want to live in one and have family in the other part. So all of those cases can happen, of course, but what do you want to look for? What do you expect during the inspection? And especially when you are looking at properties when you're going to showings or you're being toured around by your realtor, or let's say you are a realtor and you're buying it yourself for an investment. What kinds of things would you be looking for? All right, well, let's get into that. First things first, you want to have something that's going to be low maintenance. So that's your goal from the get-go. Low maintenance. Do you want those phone calls at night from tenants? No. Okay, that was an easy question. So how do you get to that point so you don't have those? Well, for one thing, starting from the outside, and I do include a picture of a typical duplex, and this one was from 1914. So it was 108 years old, and it was a stone foundation or cut stone. It's not like rocks, you know, big rocks are thrown together. Rocks are generally, if you think about the way foundations were made, your masons had, your stonemasons, they had some stone hammers that had a very sharp claw, a single claw, not the type that's made for like pulling out a nail, like a hammer, but a claw that, actually it wasn't a claw. I'm not sure what you call it. It was more like a blade on the other end, and it was, they could basically chip off ends of rocks very precisely to make them of the shape that they needed to fit them in to build a foundation, and they were really good at it. It's incredible how they did that. So, one of the things with a stone foundation, you're going to have some seepage. Even if you have mortar in between the rocks, the stones, the cut stones, you are going to have some seepage, so you need to prevent seepage. How do you prevent seepage? Okay, and this applies even if you have a poured foundation or a block foundation. Number one, if you want a low maintenance investment, a duplex or four family, whatever, keep the trees, the bushes, the vines away from your house. But I like trees. I like vines. I like them too, but I don't like them on my house. And if you don't want phone calls in the middle of the night that you got squirrels in your attic or raccoons, then keep them away from your house. No tree should be closer than 10 feet from the house, maybe even 15. No branches should be touching the house. Cut the branches. If you have an oak tree, cut the branches even more because the oak branches, the leaves, create this acid kind of stuff that drops on the roof with a misty spray that you don't even see, and it causes fungus to grow on your roof. Do you want fungus on your roof deteriorating your roof? No. So know what an oak tree looks like. You can look that up on your own. Make sure if you have an oak tree that it's a good distance away from the house. Do not let any branches overhang the house. Here's a rule of thumb. If branches are overhanging the house, then roots are underneath the house. Okay? That's a pretty good rule of thumb. Okay. So, on the outside also, grading, super important. At this particular house, there was a, from 1914, you had a typical covered front porch. And you had, it was open underneath, except the lattice work that was around it. So I got on my hands and knees and looked underneath into the lattice work. And then underneath, and I could see that there were some indentations towards the front foundation wall. So those need to be filled in with dirt. So unscrew the lattice work, add some topsoil, pack it in, slope it away from the house so that water runs away from the house. And that's going to be pretty important when I talk about the foundation wall, when I discuss the twist that had to do with this duplex in the basement. Okay, so I'll talk about that in a bit. All right, water, keeping water away from the house. There was a sidewalk against the house on the left side, a sidewalk on the house around the house on the right side. Both of them had a little bit of a gap in between the stone foundation, the foundation wall, and the sidewalk. So I instructed the buyer to definitely get some mortar, some quickcrete, whatever you want to call it, of the appropriate type, and definitely create a seam filler there. Fill that seam in, slope that a little bit away from the house so that water does not go up against the foundation. Next, at the gutters, when you have an older house, you want to look up to make sure there's no stains on the soffit. Why would there be stains on the soffit? Because if you have box or Yankee gutters and they are leaking, they're going to seep through and cause wood rot, which is going to be very visible. That was not there at this particular house, so that was a good thing. Okay, on the right rear corner was a downspout that had a 5-foot attachment extension on it, but that really wasn't taking water far enough. This was the whole right side of the house's water. All that water, you really don't want that near your foundation. So it was a miraculous thing that there were no signs of moisture intrusion in this basement. I don't know how that was possible, but it just was. It was just very well built. But since the right rear corner could be extended and the slopage of the yard in the back went towards the house, it would be stupid to extend the downspout to the backyard because that water is just going to come back. So I instructed the buyer to go ahead and get a 50-foot piece of the black plastic solid 4-inch tubing and extend that from the right rear corner all the way to the front beyond the porch so that that water can go downhill, which really was towards the street. That's the best thing to do. So that was in the report, of course, and that was told to the buyer. Around the four corners, so if we've dealt with water, and I think we did pretty good, pretty well. We talked about vegetation, vines, grading, gutters, extensions. I think we handled water quite well. At the back, or one more thing, the back had a basement walkout that did not have a drain at the bottom of it. At least I couldn't see one. Since there was no drain at the back steps going into the basement, then water can basically, since there was no roof overhang also, water can drop down in there and get in the basement. How there was none visible is beyond me. I really don't understand that either, but there wasn't. So I had suggested to build a overhang with flashing against the house, maybe like with rubber membrane cover, maybe on plywood or something. And as long as it's sloping away from the house and the rubber membrane roof overhangs and is attached well, that wood shouldn't rot that quickly. It should last many years for sure. And then that water can go away from the house and not into the basement. So there's ways of doing that. So the outside I really thought was quite good. Now, something in particular with stone foundations, with mortar, sometimes over time, if you walk around the foundation, you'll see gaps in the mortar. How does that happen? Well, water, percolation, just time. Mortar just needs to be replaced in various voids. That's the way I'll call them, just voids. And a stonemason can re-mortar or tuck point those joints to make sure that you don't have places that our little garter snakes can get in your basement and that sort of thing. So that's a very typical finding for a house with a stone foundation. You're really not going to see that with block foundations or with poured foundations, of course. All right, so let's work our way inside the house. Oh, actually, my brain just fired on a couple things that I needed to cover. The roof was in acceptable condition, 7 to 9 years. We did have a tree branch problem in the back where tree branches were close to the rear of the house, which actually caused, and probably windstorms, those branches to rub up against the shingles. So the rear rake edge of the roof, even though the roof was probably about 7 to 9 years, did have some damage. Fortunately, there was a pack of shingles in the basement, which I think can be used to replace that rake edge. And then, of course, if the tree is trimmed, that won't be a problem in the future. Or if the tree is just simply removed, that would be maybe even better. Okay, chimney is being used by two furnaces and two water heaters. And so the chimney is important and can't be removed. Sometimes when you switch over to electric only into a heat pump situation and water heaters are electric, you can do away with, or if your furnaces are high efficiency and then you also switch over to electric water heaters, then your chimney can go away when somebody installs a roof, because there were no fireplaces in this house. They probably were taken out and covered over. That being said, you still were using the fireplace, or excuse me, the chimney, to exhaust the water heater and furnace exhaust. So, being that there was no metal chimney cap, but the chimney looked acceptable, we suggested that a metal chimney cap be installed to help preserve the chimney for against deterioration. So that was put in the report as well. All right. So let's come on inside the house. The entry you had for unit one could be from the front door. You also had, which is typical for a house of this design, on the side you have an entrance that has a set of stairs going to the tenant upstairs and a straight ahead along the right to the first floor tenant. So the first floor tenant actually had two access points to their particular scenario. This was a little different. You have individual bedrooms being rented out. So there was a shared kitchen on the first floor, a tenant on the left front bedroom, and a tenant on the rear left bedroom. And then the little twist, surprise here, there was a tenant in the basement that was on the shared electrical panel for this scenario. I'll talk a little bit about that in the near future here. So all the electric had been updated. Very nicely, actually. All the knob and tube wiring had been taken out. So if you're thinking about low maintenance, that's something you may want to think about, because over time, your homeowner's insurance policy, you won't have to put on there that you have knob and tube wiring. So if you have all Romex wiring or sheathed wiring and Romex, then that's going to be a little bit cheaper than having knob and tube wiring to insure. Plus, not every insurance company will insure that. So if you're thinking about low maintenance and good cash flow, make sure your roof is in good condition. Make sure you don't have a roof that's in need of replacement very soon. A metal chimney cap will also help future maintenance issues. Less maintenance, less tuck pointing, less calling on a stonemason. If your foundation needs some tuck pointing, get that done ahead of time, and that should last for many, many years to come. All right, so I'm just trying to, as we go along here, I want to add these things to help you with your cash flow. Hopefully you're taking notes, jotting these things down. Let's back the train up a little bit on this place as well. It had two furnaces, one for the first floor, one for the second floor, but there were no central, there were no air conditioners aside from window ACs. Okay, so that's something you may want to think about. If you want to have a little bit maybe higher rent, you may want to think about installing some ductless heat pumps. If you already have furnaces and you don't want to install new ductwork, you can either put central AC units and use the existing ductwork if the HVAC technician says that it will work with it, or if you have a boiler and you're providing hot water for your tenants, but you want to put some ACs in, and if you want to get away from the window ACs, then you could potentially put in the ductless heat pumps, which have like maybe one, two, three, I've even seen up to four receptacles per HVAC unit. So then if the heat pump is outside, you have like two different receptacles that put out the cooling, and they have a remote control with each one. So the more those receptacles you have and the larger the unit tonnage-wise, the more expensive that installation is going to be. So that's something you may want to consider. Window ACs versus ductless heat pumps versus central AC units. Central AC units would use the ductwork, whereas ductless heat pumps would not, of course. And obviously, window ACs would not either. Are you going to own your window ACs, or do the tenants own them? That's something to think about too. Some window ACs use 220 volt power. Some use just the 110. The older houses that have the smaller electrical panels and less electric are going to use the 110s. That's something you may want to take a note on, okay, as an investor or somebody taking care of a multifamily house. All right. Coming inside the house again, getting back to talking about all the electric was replaced at this place. And all of the kitchens and bathroom countertops were all grounded. They all have GFCI receptacles. One thing we didn't see was a City of Cincinnati, in this particular case, inspection sticker. If your local municipality requires you to use pull permits, then you want to make sure you have that. Otherwise, check with the seller to make sure that a permit was issued, or it, at least an inspection possibly needs to be done. So that's something you'll want to check on. All right. All the plumbing actually had been replaced. Bathrooms had been updated. Windows had been replaced. Vinyl replacement windows. Do you have wooden original double hung pulley weighted double hung sash windows that have all the rust flakes from the, not rust flakes, but the paint flakes from the lead-based paint in the window tracks? That could be a problem, okay? Something you may want to consider. If you want low maintenance in the future, there might be a sunk cost to get the windows replaced with vinyl replacement windows so that you lower your costs for the future. But that does come at a sunk cost expense, of course. A lot of window companies have payment plans, of course. So it may only cost you $99 a month for X number of months, whatever it may be. So that's something to investigate for certain. I did forget to mention on the outside, this particular house was more than likely cedar, possibly sequoia or redwood. And it had a couple, three or four places actually on the corners where some of the wood was deteriorated, just at the corners, which is indicative of water running down the corner of the house and ending up and spending the most time dripping off at the bottom at the corner. That is a pretty simple repair. And then it did have a lot of paint flakes coming off of the wood. So make sure your painter is going to do proper caulking, proper sanding, proper scraping, proper priming so that your paint will last a whole lot longer than just putting it on bare wood or not scraping and painting over that. That's even worse, or at least maybe is equally as bad. If you want your paint to last 7-10 years and have low maintenance, do it right. Do it once. Make sure you get the right painter, and sealing, caulking, scraping, preparation's 99%. That's how you get a really good life out of your paint job. So definitely interview a couple of painters before you pull the trigger on that. If you have really poor condition siding, vinyl can be put on over that. Sometimes hardy plank, the concrete board can also. That's something you may want to look into. Rhino Shield, you've probably heard the commercials on the radio. They can go over that stuff as well. So there's lots of different options for siding to minimize your maintenance in the future. All right. I really hope I'm hitting on some things that help you lower your future costs and keep your cash flow good. Okay, so let's keep going on this. So the bathrooms, bedrooms, the wood floor had been updated, the outlets, the electric, ceiling fans all worked. There was no signs of leaks going on. One thing that was lacking was no exhaust fans in the kitchen. There was one microwave. One of the units did not have a microwave. Microwaves do have the recirculating, but it doesn't, the fans, but it doesn't vent to the outside. If you have gas stoves, you absolutely need to have externally vented fans. You don't want that carbon monoxide buildup, even if it's very slight. So that's something to really consider. All right. Good to think about, good to consider. This house already had the shallow fireplaces that came with the house sealed off, sealed up, non-existent. Maybe even the chimneys and fireplaces were removed and they only left the one chimney in the back, which was the one that's for venting the furnaces and water heaters. I don't know what the house originally looked like, so those things may have been done without me really knowing about it. So that's an option you may want to have too. Do you want your tenants having fires in the fireplaces? Probably not. You probably want to put that in your lease agreement. So that may require some work to have those removed. Okay. So when you have tenants who share an electrical panel and therefore share a bill, you may want to consider, when you are investing in a property, do you want to have absolutely split off electric, water, and gas for each tenant? Or are you comfortable with paying for the hot water for your tenants? Or is there even a in-between scenario where if you have multiple tenants, maybe you have one apartment that has all the utilities associated with that one, and you have an individual bedroom per bedroom rental situation, and you split up a utility bill situation. So you have to decide and know what you're getting into. So do definitely ask questions like that. Don't assume that everything is all split off. In this particular case, I'll go ahead and talk about the unique situation in the basement. There was two bedrooms on the first floor, so two tenants, a kitchen and a bathroom, and there was also a bathroom in the basement. So the two tenants on the first floor shared that bathroom, and then the basement tenant had, that particular person had their own bathroom, and however, they all used the power from panel number one, electrical panel number one. When I took the cover off of the panel for number one, there were double tap breakers, which is to say more than one wire going into a receptacle, a breaker wire connection on the stove, 50 amp breaker. And there was a 20 amp wire coming off of that Aromex wire that powered that individual's apartment outlets and lights. That is absolutely an overheating hazard, not acceptable. That needs a licensed electrician to make repairs. So I think probably, and this is left up to a licensed electrician, but I can certainly speculate, which is to say, I think a little 30 amp sub panel is probably going to be needed off of that 100 amp panel and to power that basement apartment. The basement apartment, even though there is a basement overall exit stairway up to the back and outside into the backyard, there has to be a means of egress from that bedroom to get out in a basement to make it a legal basement bedroom, to make it a legal apartment. So there was a window, vinyl replacement window, which was different than the other glass block windows in the basement that I believe qualified for that. However, you want to make sure and ask questions of your seller, did you get approval from your municipality for that particular window to be a legal means of egress? Okay, so you really want to make sure of that. Okay, so some other things to think about for maximizing your cash flow and minimizing your problems with issues in the future. In other words, keeping your maintenance low would be, how does your attic look? What types of things are in your attic? If you have any blowers in the attic for any furnace air conditioning systems, make sure your air intakes are not in the attic. There ought to be a way to cut a hole in the ceiling and put your air return and your filter in the ceiling instead of in the attic. I have seen too many times where you have to go in an attic to change a filter. That is just stupid, and that is poor design. So that should be something you want to avoid. Ask your seller where the filters are for the furnaces, okay, and where they're changed. In this particular unit, they were both in the basement. Now, one of the furnaces was 43 years old, and it was not a Williamson, so it really did need to be replaced. Williamsons or old Yorks, they probably can last more than 43 years, and some of them do, and they're only about 60% efficient. But you could probably drive a car into one of them and it would still operate. They're just built like tanks. Okay, so attics again. You don't want any fresh air returns in there. You want to make sure you don't have a bunch of exposed wiring in there with insulation on it, especially if it is knob and tube wiring. How well insulated is your attic? Does your upstairs tenant matter as far as heat loss? If you have a really old place over 100 years old, you might have only a couple inches of insulation, and then the upstairs tenant is losing all of their heat into the attic, and their power bill is going to be very high. Now, if you're paying for heat and hot water, then that's something you definitely want to address. Otherwise, you'll have to use your own conscience as to determine if you want to add more insulation for your tenant upstairs so that they are not cold and having a huge power bill. Now, if you want to raise rent and not have somebody to leave because they can't afford to live in your place because their power bills are too high, that might be an incentive to add more insulation upstairs in the attic. All right, so there's attics we've covered. Make sure you don't have any pest entries either. Keep your outside soffits, fascias, box gutters, gable vents with screens. Make sure they're not breached. These are things that can let pests in your house. Another reason to keep the vines and the trees away from your house. Keep easy ways for your pests to not get in the attic, okay? I've seen raccoon poo in attics too many times. I've seen live raccoons in attics. Okay, so keep it low maintenance. Pay now or pay later. That's probably a phrase that I like to say. Do it right, do it once. We have covered everything except the basement. We've covered the tenant who is in the basement. And another thing that didn't work at two, actually, was it all the units? I guess it was. All three tenants, the bathroom fans, no, two of them didn't work. One did work. Two bathroom fans didn't work. And you had paint starting to flake. Now, if you've got an older place and you are signing that 1978 lead paint disclosure form, you'll want to do some research on that yourself. You want to keep everything well painted, and you certainly don't want paint to start chipping and peeling. So it's really important for you to have bathroom fans that work. Make you maybe put in the in your lease, if you shower, you have to use the bathroom fan. You have to turn it on. I mean, these are things you probably want to put in there to keep your maintenance low. That shouldn't be that hard to turn a bathroom fan on. Okay, now basement, the last things I talked about, the furnaces. Two furnaces, two water heaters, two electrical panels. So I talked about the electrical panels, which, by the way, also had some rust in them on the breakers. So regardless, that does need to be looked at by a licensed electrician with some repairs and or replacements. How about the water main? If you're buying an older property prior to 1920, you could have a chance of having a lead water supply line. That needs to be replaced if it is. Now, and that's going to be $2,000, $3,000, upwards of $4,000. Your municipality that you live in may have some sort of program with discounts if you use one of their approved plumbers for the city. So that's something to think about. What about galvanized steel supply, water supply line, which this had? That rust from the inside out, and it could be distribution, the water distribution lines throughout the house as well. This one didn't. It just had galvanized steel coming in from the floor, which would be outside in the ground as well. That's going to rust from the inside out, or already has. Okay? That constricts water flow. I didn't particularly observe any really bad water flow. It could have been stronger, and that's because of that water supply line. That needs to be replaced also, galvanized steel. When you switch over to copper, it'll be amazing how much more water you have coming in the house. Okay, let's talk about the furnaces. There's two furnaces, two water heaters. One of the water heaters was 15 and had a dislodged flue pipe causing some carbon monoxide backsplashing. That needs to be fixed. 15 years on a water heater, it's probably worth go ahead and replacing it. This one was a little undersized at 30 gallons anyway. Replacing it with a 40 and sleeping well at night as a property owner, so you're not going to get calls at night about the water heater dying in February when there's a foot of snow on the ground on a Saturday and you've got to replace the water heater from a plumber who's glad to do it but is going to charge you $4,000 because, well, it's a foot of snow on the ground, and it's Saturday. So there's your math. Okay. That being said, the furnace, one of them was 43 and the other one was 4 years old. One of them needs replaced, the other one doesn't. Changing your air filters is something very, very important, and getting your furnaces and if you have air conditioners, serviced annually to keep these guys running as long as possible to get 15 to 20 years out of a central air unit or heat pump, and 20 to 25 years out of a gas-fired furnace. Now, I mentioned that this gas-fired furnace, Bryant brand, was 43 years old. It was still working, but it really needed to be replaced. It had a lot of, oh man, there was like some carbon-based material. It's hard to call it ash. It was big, chunky stuff, almost like coal pieces were in there. I don't know how that happens, but that told me that's not a good thing, and it definitely needs to be replaced. The older the furnace, the bigger chance you have of a cracked heat exchanger, and that's a no-no because then you end up with carbon monoxide, and that's also a no-no, of course, and that's dangerous. This place I consider, once these things are done, to be a pretty simple, well-built, structurally sound property that's going to be in good shape for many years and have good cash flow if things are done right. I definitely knew the investor, so I know he's going to take care of it and do a good job with it. So, without further ado, I hope this has given you some good tips, good pointers on picking out that duplex and asking good questions to the seller before the inspection, and then asking good questions during the inspection, following through on the report. I just hope this really helps you be pointed in the right direction. So without further ado, this has been the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, and thank you for listening.